All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Grease the Wheels, your weekly technician podcast that comes to you from the Rock and Roll Garage, courtesy of your Uncle Jimmy. That's me. Hey, what I'm trying to do out there is put together some advice and maybe some entertainment, either one or the other or both or neither in some cases for all you automotive technicians out there and basically technicians of any kind that are out there fucking busting their ass, fixing shit for people, people who don't seem to give a fuck. I want to say thank you to those people. I want to say thanks for listening. Thanks for the comments that you send our way. Thanks for everything you do. Thanks for keeping the planet moving, lit, heated, cooled, whatever it is you do that helps the planet continue on. Thank you very much for what you do, okay? I mean this honestly and sincerely from the bottom of my heart. I want to thank you for what you do. I know that it's a thankless existence. Now, today's podcast, I want to get right into it. I want to call this today's podcast The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. And I have threatened for many, many months now to do a podcast again about service advisors, and here it is. Let me just say this before I get started ripping service advisors to fucking shreds. Being a service advisor is probably, in my opinion, and maybe yours if you thought about it, because I know some people don't do well walking a mile in other people's shoes. I do. I realize that being a service advisor is really probably the shittiest fucking job on planet Earth. I really honestly mean that. It is the shittiest job out there. It can be. And the reason it is because, and I'll spell it out for you here. The reason it is because you have to deal with people. And people suck. People suck. Not all the time. Sometimes they rarely suck. Sometimes they never suck. Sometimes they don't suck when you want them to. But that's a whole other podcast that I'm not going to do. But people are terrible. People are just mean and evil and rude and obnoxious and mean and evil. I know I said that twice because sometimes they're just doubly mean and evil. Now, does that mean that everybody is? No, of course not. It's too general of a statement to be true in all cases, of course, ladies and gentlemen. Some people are absolutely, honestly polite and friendly and nice, and you love them to death, but it just seems like that's the exception rather than the rule. The rule is for people to be obnoxious and evil. I honestly believe that there's a lot of people out there roaming around on the planet trying to exist who are, quite frankly, insane. They're just crazy. The things that they think, the things that they do based on what they think are just fucking wrong. And this is what makes a service advisor's job absolutely unbelievably horrible. It makes it horrible because these people, a lot of these people, I mean, this is, of course, I'm talking about people who drive cars. There's a lot of insane and crazy people who don't actually drive cars. They typically just live under a bridge or something. But a lot of them do drive cars, and maybe they even have little jobs, and oh my God, they're breeding. Some have wives and husbands and children. Man, tough to wrap my mind around that one. Some people definitely should not be allowed to breed. I personally have not allowed myself to breed, and I think that all of you should send me a thank you note for that. But all that shit aside, seriously, having to deal with the general public in any kind of a retail situation, trust me, I know from experience, it's soul crushing. It's mind bending. It actually makes my brain throb to think about some of the situations that I used to have to encounter when I worked retail, which I did for actually quite some time. So it's not like I'm just saying, oh, you know, I work for a week and a half as a cashier at Walmart. No, I spent a great many years behind a parts counter at various parts stores and parts outlets around the nation, and had to deal with some excruciating stupidity and rudeness and other assorted feelings that people gave you when you had to try to deal with them. Now, there's always going to be some people who are cool and that you like to deal with, and maybe even they become friends, or maybe you're just friends with them already or whatever. But that's a minuscule percentage of people that you deal with on a regular basis. Now, I started out talking about service advisors, and one of the problems that they have is that probably about, you know, and here we go with Uncle Jimmy making up facts and figures, probably right around 60 to 65% of the time when they have to deal with a customer, there's something wrong with their car. And when people, if you've never done this job before, trust me, gentlemen and ladies, all eight of you, if you've never had to deal with people who have a broken automobile and they need to go here, there, and everywhere, oh, by the way, then you don't know really what the depths of hell look and or sound like. You're not going to be able to fathom exactly what the fucking problem is. You're not going to be able to grasp it. Okay, now as I said, I worked several years in retail. So when I have to deal with a service advisor, in the back of my mind, you know, right in front of all the porn that's in the back of my mind, right in the back of my mind, I know that their job sucks because they have to deal with the general public. It sucks. I think it was the movie Clerks where they said, you know, this would be a really great job if it wasn't for the customers. It's really true. Now, I think that when we talk about service advisors, people who have to deal with the general public, write down what they have wrong with their car and possibly even what they fucking think is wrong with their car. Oh, which, by the way, they're usually fucking wrong. And then they have to deal with the customer's neurosis about A, is it covered under warranty? B, who's going to pay for it? C, whose fault it is? Or D, really, literally, all of the above. And that's what makes that job ugly. It makes it ugly. I mean, literally, if anyone I know came up to me and said, Dad, I'm thinking about becoming a service advisor. And I say, okay, here is a ball peen hammer. Okay, what am I supposed to do with this? Hit yourself in the head with it about 1,000 fucking times, okay? Because that's what every day is going to seem like. I really want to illustrate this point for you, ladies and gentlemen. If you have service advisors who either do a poor job or don't do the job the way you'd like them to, or don't do the job the way maybe the service manager wants them to, or maybe they just don't do the job the way anybody wants them to, whether it's the customers, the service manager, or you, or even the parts department. If you get somebody who doesn't do it, think about it for 10 seconds before you go and round off on them and maybe even start hitting them with something blunt. Think about the bullshit that they've had to fucking deal with. And I'm talking, this is not something that happens once a day. It's not something that happens a couple of times a week. This happens all day long. And with the advent of the telephone, thank you, Mr. Bell, these people can just stay right at home and phone it in. They can take their insanity and shove it right down a phone line and have it come out of your speaker and into your ear hole and fucking beat you about the head and neck with some stupid bullshit that they're having a fucking problem with. The phone, I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, if you're a service advisor right now, the telephone is the absolute worst motherfucking device they ever invented. Oh, sure, it's great for calling up and saying, oh, you know, I'd like a pizza, or hey, Mom, I'm going to be late, or hey, honey, I'll be there right after I get done doing this. But it's also a device used by people who have questions or problems to foist those questions and problems onto other fucking people who, oh, by the way, don't want to deal with them at all. The phone is really the bane of your existence as a service advisor. It's the bane of your existence because you answer it and it's somebody going bah, 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 for like who even knows how long, sometimes anywhere from half an hour to 45 minutes even. And I believe me when I tell you that's not bullshit. I have heard that. I've heard, you know, and you sit there with the phone up to your ear and you're rolling your eyes and looking around and thinking, please, someone just kill me right now. Just murder me dead. I will shake your hand with my last dying breath, please. Because literally, some of the most insane horse shit comes out of the telephone. It's being transmitted from someone somewhere on the planet, really. Because you think about it, 7 billion people on the planet, and literally any single one of them could call you up at any fucking time and give you shit about anything they want. That's just mind-numbing. That is soul-crushing. 7 billion people could call you up at any given time and fuck with you. And it's just not, it's no good. So think about that for a second. I mean, you know, I'm not here to stick up for service advisors. Okay. Because like I said, there's the good and the bad and the ugly. That's the ugly part of it, of being a service advisor. And there's good and bad. Okay. The good, the bad. That's the ugly part. The ugly part is that they have to deal with. And, you know, it's fucked up, too, because sometimes the ugly part doesn't come in from the customers. It doesn't come in into your drive-ons or into your shop. It doesn't wander in through the front door. It doesn't shoot itself out of the phone and tranquilize your brain with mind-numbing phrases and sentences and other assorted horseshit that gets said. It also comes from us. I got a call. What's the term I'm looking for here? I got to call bullshit on us, gentlemen and ladies. Any of you out there that are twisting the wrenches and you have a service advisor, you get cars all the time, and we all know that this is true, and we just have to own up to it. We all get cars we do not want to fucking work on. And there could be a myriad of reasons why we don't want to work on them. We just don't want to fucking work on them. I mean, maybe it's early in the morning, or it's almost lunchtime, or it's late in the day, or maybe it's a make or a model of a car we don't want to fucking work on. Hello, Jaguar, Alfa Romeo. I don't want to work on that shit. Don't bring me some fucking car that used to be nice fucking 12 years ago, but now it is a raging pile of shit. I don't want to work on it. I don't want to work on that stuff. You need, really, to me, honestly, as a mechanic, I feel that someone somewhere should sort this shit out and say, oh, you can't come here with that fucking thing. But that's not how it works. Everybody wants all the money they can get, okay? Especially if you have a service manager or a general manager or an owner. They're not going to say no. They're never going to fucking say no. And this makes not only your job hard, but the service advisor's job hard. Because what'll happen is, and I've done this, okay, and I recommend you do this too. If you get a car that you don't want to work on, what you'll want to do, and this might make your service advisor's job hell, might make it ugly, but tough shit, this is the way it's going to be. If somebody brings me a car I don't want to work on, and it's older and it hasn't been very well taken care of, or whatever's wrong with it, I will diagnose what's wrong with it, and then I will also make a list of everything else that on that car that is fucked up. And I will make them a fucking estimate that will make them pass right the fuck out. Okay? And I have done that. It's my way of saying, get your piece of shit the fuck out of here, okay? $12,000 to make your fucking 96 Chevy Cavalier right again. $12,000. You could buy fucking 15 of them for that much money. Seriously. No, I mean it. If you, and because nobody else is going to protect you from this stuff. Nobody else is going to say to this guy with a 1991 Ford Escort that no one's going to say to him, oh, you know, you probably shouldn't even put 10 cents in a gas tank because the thing is a fucking rotted pile of shit and you're not even going to be driving it next week. It's going to crushed. It should be crushed. It should have been, you know, compacted into a small cube and melted down and made into Toyota Camrys or something. That's the thing. And so what I do, and I have done this in the past, is somebody will bring me a car and it's just a raging pile of shit and I absolutely do not want to work on it. So I will hit them right between the eyes with a ball peen hammer of a fucking estimate that will just absolutely destroy them. And I did that on, you know, I can sit here and tell you this right now. I did that on a car. It was a couple of years ago. And this guy brought his car in and nobody in our building wanted to work on it. And I took it in and I looked it over and I wrote an estimate for everything that was wrong with it. Everything. Everything. And it ended up being somewhere in the neighborhood of $20,000. Now, I thought to myself, self? I don't think that car's worth $20,000. I certainly don't believe anybody is going to put $20,000 into it. Guess what? I was fucking wrong. I was wrong, folks. This guy shelled out the fucking coin to get this car fixed and worked on. And I mean, it took me a fucking week and a half. And I mean, I made pretty good money on it. I cannot lie about that. And we did almost everything that they wanted us to do to the car, that the customer wanted us to do to the car. We did almost absolutely everything. It was ridiculous. The guy just had the money. He had the money. He loved the car. You know, what it was he had just come out of the oil fields. He'd been in an oil field for 6 months and, you know, he didn't even get a chance to spend any money out there. So you're fat. I mean, bulging at the seams with cash and you got nothing to spend it on and you have a car and it's not in such good shape, but you really like the car. So there it is. There it is, you know. And now you're $20,000 lighter in the pockets. And let me just tell you something right now, okay? I did not get $20,000 from that car, that's for sure. A company I work for did, and then they took a razor and sliced me off a very thin piece of it. So, but a service advisor is probably not going to shield you from something of this nature, okay? So, and I feel like they should. I feel like they should say no occasionally. You know, they should just go out, and one of the things they don't do, which I wish they would do, is they should do a walk around. You know, when a customer brings a car in, they go, wow, the service advisor should go out and walk around it and say, you're going to fix this? Yeah, you know, honestly, we're really expensive. We charge actual, honest to God, money. We don't let you pay for repairs with Mallow Cup dollars or fucking Chuck E. Cheese tokens. You have to pay actual goddamn cash money here for repairs. before you can get your car back. And honestly, I wouldn't spend a fucking nickel on this one. So why don't you take your fucking busted down whip and get the fuck out of here. I mean, some people really need to be told right to their face, say, why are you putting money in this? It's just fucking stupid. Service advisor's never going to do that. That's the ugly part of their job. The traits, the characteristics, and the personality and the attitude that you need to be a really, really good service advisor. And I'm not just talking about a so-so one. I'm talking about a good one. A good one that makes a very attractive wage and is somebody who is looked at in a very, very high regard and commands a lot of respect. There's a lot of work that goes into that. There's a lot of work that goes into that. And the problem is that when you start out, you're the new guy, day one, day 10, day 30, even like a year or so, you're never going to approach that guy. You're not going to become that guy. It's going to take so long to become the guy at a shop or a dealership that people just go to, that people go, hey, I always have, you know, let's pick a name, Chuck. We'll call him Chuck. Chuck's a great service advisor. He has charisma. He's a good looking guy. He talks very clearly. He doesn't mumble or use slang terminology. He always tells people how it is. Maybe he's not always 100% truthful, but he will tell them how it is. Maybe he fudges a little bit. You know, it's like, your car's not in that great of shape, but if you want, we can take care of it. We can fix it up. We can make it good for you. When really what he should probably say is, car's a pile of shit. You need to get the fuck out of here. But hey, Chuck's not like that. Chuck's a good guy. And you know what? After a while, you start to learn, you start to look forward to seeing Chuck because he's going to straighten you out and he's going to tell you the straight scoop and he's going to charge you fairly. And he's going to, you know, if he says you need something, you need something, you just start to trust him. But man, that takes literally to be that guy, to be a Chuck, takes many years. It takes many years and it requires a lot of work. It requires a lot of work. You can't, when people say, hey, I want you to call me at 3 o'clock, you can't just watch them walk out the door and go, yeah, fuck you at 3 o'clock. I'm going to be taking a shit and looking at fucking YouTube videos on my phone. I'm not calling you, jackass. No. What you have to do is you have to say, okay, I'll set an alarm or I'll have somebody say, hey, at 3 o'clock, remind me, I got to call that guy. That's how it gets done. If you come through for people in a manner in which that they expect and also to a manner which shows that you have respect for them, their time, and when what their business means to you, then you are going to get ahead. That's as simple as it is. That's really, you know, I mean, if you went to a place where they treated you like family and they called you by your first name and they knew the name of your dog and they knew what you drove and how many miles you had on it last time you were there and who worked on it and why they worked on it and what they did to it, you'd probably go back there every fucking time. You'd go back there, you know, you wouldn't even have to talk to them really. You know, you go up to them and go, hey, remember we talked about this last time? Yeah, go ahead and do it. Toss them the keys. And then that kind of service advisor might say to that customer as he's leaving, say, hey, if I find anything else, you want me to just go ahead and do it? You laugh, but there are service advisors out there who have that kind of relationship with their customers where the customers actually trust them to go ahead and do something to their car without having to call them up and get their approval. Because some of these fucking people, and I mean, like I said before, I work for a Highline, so I think that there's probably a lot of lawyers and doctors and other types of specialists who really can't have you breaking their balls in the middle of a heart transplant going, hey, would you like to change the air filter on your car? And they're like, I got this guy's heart in my hand. Can I call you back? You know, I mean, it's one of those deals where they just say, hey, whatever it needs, man, just get it done. Okay, just do it. Hit me with a bill, drop it off at my house or whatever. That's another thing that service advisors need to, they can do. They can, make them part of the family, really. That's really what it comes down to is if you are going to be a good service advisor, you have to treat your customers like family, and then you have to let them become part of your family, and you will become part of their family, and you'll all be one big happy family. And then, you know what? And I'm not shitting you when I tell you this, is after a while, you will actually feel like family, and the job can be fun. Because if you didn't hate every customer, and believe me, I've met a lot of service advisors who just hate the fact that they do what they do. They hate the fucking cocksuckers who bring them cars all day long. They hate the unreasonable bullshit they want them to do. You know, they're kind of like, oh, you want me to call you at 3? Go fuck yourself. I'm not calling you at 3. No, if you develop and maintain a very good relationship with your customer over time, your job gets really easy. And oh, by the way, also, you get paid more and more and more, because if you do this with one customer or maybe all of your customers, because, I mean, it's contagious, right? If you're going to be nice to one guy, you might as well be nice to all of them. You know, you might as well be nice to all the people that you have to deal with. And guess what? After a while, you really start to build a clientele, and you can always tell. And I talked about this on another podcast. You can always tell when you got a service advisor who's doing his job pretty much correctly, when you look at his office during the Christmas season and it's got more liquor in it than a liquor store. Oh, it drives me crazy as a technician, because these guys just talk to you. That's all they do. They just talk to you. Say, hey, you know, blah, 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 all day long. They don't ever fucking touch the customer's cars. I'm the fucking asshole who scraped my knuckles on his fucking valve cover. I'm the guy who burned my fingers on his catalytic converter. I'm the cocksucker who fucking replaced his hoses and his belts or his tires or his brakes or whatever the fuck else happened to his car or whatever his car needed. I'm the fucking cocksucker who did it. I should be getting a crown royal, not you, you fucking dick. But that's the problem. And sometimes it's not the problem, but that's the problem with being a service advisor, is that they see you as the guy who gets it done. If they only fucking knew. If they only knew. Okay, well, now I want to tell you about, and I've told you about some good service advisors just now. And that's what they'll do, is they'll develop a relationship and they'll maintain it, and it'll work out for everybody involved, really. But that, I'm telling you right now too, that type of relationship is a hell of a lot of work. It's a hell of a lot of work. It's hard work, and it doesn't look like hard work. And the thing is, with a service advisor, okay, you could have absolutely the finest relationships possible with your customers. But if you have a shitty service manager, and I would say, here's Uncle Jimmy's made up facts and figures again, probably 70% of you out there do. I don't know. Maybe it's not that high. I don't know. I'm making up numbers, so it doesn't really matter. I can fucking say whatever I want, right? It's my opinion. I don't know. I think half of you have a service manager who is just a worthless piece of shit, and the rest of you have ones that are okay. And that can affect a service advisor's job, okay? Because they're going to need certain things from a service manager. They're going to need to go ahead to do this, that, or the other thing. They're going to need to go ahead to go pick up a guy's car and bring it in and get it worked on and bring it back to him. They're going to need the service manager's okay to maybe give him a loaner or maybe give him a discount. The guy spent 20 grand on his car. Do you think we could give him a little bit of a discount? Hell yeah. Hell fucking yeah. I mean, you know, if you spend 20 grand on a car, if you start adding up all the fucking gross profit on the labor and on the parts, it's mind numbing. I mean, it's probably close to $12,000 profit. Could I afford to give the guy 10% off? Sure. What's that? What is 10% on $20,000? I don't know. It's $2,000. Sure. Why not? So I only make $10,000 instead of 12. I think I could do that. Maybe we agree it should be just 5%. Even that's substantial on a big ticket. Okay. So you need good help around you. And you know, you're listening to this right now. You've got a fucking wrench in your hand, and maybe you've got gloves on. Maybe you're greasy as shit. You wish somebody would turn the heat up, or maybe somebody would turn the air conditioning up or whatever. You're a technician, and for whatever reason, and we all know what they are, there's a billion of them. For whatever reason, you're in a cranky fucking mood. And a service advisor comes out and he starts telling you about some bullshit. He starts telling you that the car that you've got right now that has 10 hours worth of work on it and you just started it needs to be done tonight. And really, that service advisor should probably not say something like that to you, unless, of course, he'd like to have a Phillips screwdriver stuck in his fucking eye hole and driven in with a ball peen hammer, because that's one of the things they do that makes them bad. That's one of the things they do that makes them bad. And I think it's always been a major issue with terrible service advisors is promise times. If you've got this guy who's as good as gold and the customers love him and he has a great attitude and he's friendly, you probably, the chances are that you like him too. And that when you ask him when something's supposed to be done, he says, just get it done whenever you get it done and I'll call him. You know, he leaves it open-ended. You know, there's an old saying in our business, under promise and over deliver. If you tell somebody it's not going to be done until Wednesday and you get it done on Tuesday and they can pick it up Tuesday night if they want, then you're a hero. But if you tell them it's going to be done Tuesday night and it doesn't get done until Wednesday night or Thursday night, then all of a sudden you're a fucking schmuck. And usually what happens in that case, and I talked about this one in an episode a while back, is that that fucking guy, that service advisor, who's a piece of shit probably, is going to throw you under the bus. Well, the technician was not working on it as hard as he should, or he was lollygagging. He was out back drinking a six-pack, and yeah, I think he might have even got stoned, and he didn't want to work on the car, and so it's not done yet. And that's the difference between a good service advisor and a bad one is promise times. You should almost never, ever, ever make a promise time, because it's almost as if there's a fucking God up there somewhere, maybe down there, who even knows. And I think his last name might be Murphy. As soon as you quote, as a service advisor, as soon as you quote some sort of a promise time, he's going to come and rear his ugly little head and go, oh yeah, watch this, asshole. And something's going to go wrong. It happens all the fucking time. I mean, if you tell me that, you know, oh, it should only take X amount of time to do a valve cover gasket on a car, and you say, well, I need it done by, you know, whatever time. If it's not a reasonable amount of time, I can almost guarantee I'm going to break something. I really almost guarantee you, because I know that if I rush, if I move fast, if I try to get something done quickly, I'm going to fuck something up. So don't do it. Just don't do it. If you're a service advisor and you're listening to this, try to lay off the fucking promise times, okay? If you've got to create a promise time, leave it open-ended. Just say, listen, I'd like to have it done for you by Wednesday night, but call me Wednesday about 3 o'clock and I'll let you know how it's going, because it might not be done. Guess what? Now all of a sudden, you've left the door open a crack. If they call you up at 3 o'clock on Wednesday and you go, hey, you know what? They did. They got it done early. They got it done this afternoon, and it's going to be ready for you at 5. Or he says he's going to have it ready for you at 5. Call me at 5 before you come. Because if something goes wrong, then that's the thing. You know, when you're talking about a bad service advisor, you're talking about somebody who's not going to take into account that shit happens. That Murphy's Law is gonna come down and drop a fucking moving citation on you. It's like they don't know or they don't care. And that's one of the things that a good service advisor will do, is they'll leave it open-ended. They'll leave room for error. Make plans in case there's a worst-case scenario. And even then, tell the customer, say, worst-case scenario, I'll have it done for you on Friday. I could have it done as early as Tuesday. Could you be a little bit more ambiguous? Well, you know what? Your car's not the fucking greatest fucking piece of machinery we're working on here today, you know? 60 other appointments today. And that's another problem that we have that nobody really seems to understand, is if you have some place, and a lot of these dealers and dealership groups actually have a call center where you call up, they call them BDCs. I don't know what it stands for. I don't really care. But they call, people will call up. They don't even know, they're not talking to the dealership that is, you know, 3 miles down the road. They're calling somewhere that's literally 1,500 miles away. And they're saying, oh, I want to make an appointment to get my car looked at on Wednesday. Okay. When are you available? I'd like to drop it off at 9 o'clock. Okay. Are you going to need a loaner car? Well, no. I mean, I can wait for it. That should be a red flag right there. You're going to drop off your car so that we can fix it for you. I mean, you haven't said if it's maintenance or not, or, you know, if it's just an oil change or whatever. You haven't said anything about what it is. And you don't want a loaner car for whatever reason. And some people don't. Okay. I personally don't like driving other people's cars because I'm a terrible driver and I will fucking hit something with your car. Just let that be known to all of you out there. If Uncle Jimmy asks you to borrow your car, you should probably say no. Unless, of course, you don't mind having it come back on the back of a flatbed. I've done that numerous times, okay? So just don't let me your shit. But some people don't want a loaner car, okay? So they want to know if they can drop it off. And the people on the other end are just like, sure, you can drop it off. Well, when's it going to be done? I'm sorry. My crystal ball's a little cloudy right now. I don't know what's wrong with it. I don't even know what kind of car it is. I don't know your name or your phone number or your email address. But you know what? If you drop the car off, I'll get all that stuff from you at that time. And then when we do find out what's wrong with it, then we'll let you know. But they can't put a time on that. All right. Well, anyway, I kind of laid out some of the things that make a service advisor good, some of the things that make them bad. I found an article. You know me, I love to borrow other people's creative and go and run wild with it. And one of the things that I like to do, which I think might drive you crazy, might drive Eric crazy. I don't know. Maybe it does. I like to find somebody else's articles and then comment on them. And what I do is I don't read them beforehand. I don't read them beforehand so that the responses are organic. So you're getting it right. right from the horse's mouth or whatever orifice you want, whatever orifice you prefer your horse's excrement from. This article is called 10 Reasons Why Service Advisors Fail. And so we'll just go right down through here. Now, when I talk about service advisors being good, bad, or ugly, I think one of the problems is that when you have the need for a service advisor in your particular shop or dealership or wherever it is you are, where you would need somebody to sell services and other things like that. This job is one of those jobs where they paint you this picture. You know, the service manager or whoever, maybe the owner, they paint you this picture that it's all fucking peaches and cream. It's just, oh, this is a great job. You get to sit here and answer the phones and plug people's information into a computer and write a service order. And then the technicians get to fix it. You don't even have to get dirty. And you can do it from a chair. Oh, my Lord. So people fall for it because they'll ask their friend, hey, how much can I make being a service advisor? Well, if you're really good at it, you're going to make, you know, anywhere from $100,000 to $250,000. $250,000. What are you, fucking crazy? No, my uncle was a service advisor for a long time and he made a lot of money. And every Christmas he gave everybody booze because he fucking had a whole goddamn office full of it. But they're doing these people a disservice because, as I said, the job sucks. And as soon as you roll in and you start doing it, you're like, holy fuck, this isn't worth $250,000 to do it. And I mean it. It's really not, as far as I'm concerned. I don't think I could ever do it. I don't have a problem talking to customers, but as a technician, I am all full of I don't give a fuck. So if a customer asks me a question and the answer is something I don't think they want to hear, guess what? I don't give a fuck. Here comes the answer. You know, I mean, I'll chop them off of the knees with a machete. I don't give a fuck. They ask me something, I'll tell them the truth. That's pretty typical of what I do. And sometimes they don't want to hear the truth, you know? And sometimes they don't like the explanation. Sometimes they can't understand the explanation. I know you've all run into that. You know, you try to explain to somebody, why do I need to do a brake fluid flush? Okay. Well, I'll explain it to you, but I can't understand it for you. Okay. And really, quite frankly, I don't have enough time or crayons to explain it to you. So just take my word for it. You need it. Okay. Anyway, let's move on here. I'm going to insult some customers some more, okay? Why service managers fail, or as Jeremy would put it, unsucceed. Like I said, I believe the reason that you're not successful at being a service advisor is that it's very, very hard work. And you have to, I really honestly believe, you know, you don't need to go to college. There's no, as far as I know, there's no college that will teach you how to be a service advisor. Okay. There's colleges where you can go and get a degree in business. Okay. Sure. But that's not the same thing. Business, you know, running a business. Yeah. Be a service advisor is part of running a business, but it's a small part of it really compared to all the other horse shit that's got to go on with running a business. And there's a lot of it, you know, there's accounting and making decisions about this, that, or the other thing and keeping, you know, all your payables and your expenses in order. And a service advisor really pretty much has one job, but it's a horrible, terrible, shitty job. Here's what this article, let me just read this to you real quick. Back to why service advisors fail, or as Jeremy would put it, unsucceed. Because according to him, you only fail if you give up. If you ask me, a service advisor who doesn't meet his goals at one shop and then moves on to the next to do the same thing again isn't successful. They're a straight up failure at their job, but you can call it whatever you want. Either way, why do some service advisors fail? Well, you could probably leave that out. All right. There's 10 things here. Is it 10? Yes, it's 10 things. Okay. And I'll give them to you. I'll try to give you the cliff notes on what I think of it. Okay. Number one, it says on here, one of the reasons that service advisors fail is that they beg for a customer service index. Now, CSI is the short version for us as technicians and even for the dealership or the shop or the owner. CSI, customer service index, that's what people think of you, and that's determined typically after they leave, after everything's all said and done. So there's a whole lot of shit that's got to go right. As I said before, people are fucking assholes. You could do everything perfectly. The service advisor could be nice as pie, treat you with respect, you know, write up your car, write up all your concerns, then find a mechanic somehow or another who's going to actually take care of all. Sorry, I have to, a little dig into myself, really there. I'm self-deprecating, you know. They get your car fixed right. They get it cleaned. Maybe they even put fucking gas in it. You know, they've set the tire pressure. So you get your car back. It's in the greatest condition it's ever been in, ever. It runs great. It drives straight. The ride is smooth again. Everything that you were supposed to fix got fixed. Everything's exactly like it was when it was brand new. But one fucking thing can go wrong. maybe, and I mean, there's so many fucking things. There's so many things. And I've heard, and you know what? Literally, if you have something out there, if you've been in a situation where someone has given you really, really terrible feedback for the most idiotic reason, hit me up on the Facebook page because I would love to hear it. I have heard some absolutely stunningly ridiculous shit. Okay. Everything from the seat was moved. Now, I mean, I'm 5'10" and about 230. So if R2-D2 comes out and his seat's all the way up, I'm going to get my balls tangled up in the steering wheel trying to get into the fucking thing. I have to move the seat just to untangle myself, for Christ's sake. I have to move the seat. I mean, I'm just a big solid glob of shit trying to get in your car to pull it in to do whatever it is I got to do to it. I'm going to move your seat. Am I going to be able to move it back to where you had it? Probably not. I've seen them. And you know, you've all seen these where the fucking thing, the goddamn seat is so close to the steering wheel that if the airbag ever went off, it would just crush you. It would fucking crush you. That's something that's kind of silly. Maybe you moved a mirror. Maybe the mirrors are not set to the person who had the car, who owns the car. Yeah, well, I had to test drive the fucking thing, and guess what? I needed to move the mirror a little bit so I could see what's coming up behind me, because especially where I am right now, it's like a three-lane highway. I pull out on it. People are sometimes right on my ass doing 90, and I'm trying to get up to 20 at the time. So I need to know if there's somebody behind me, and I need to know how fucking close they are. I've heard what other ridiculous things I've heard? Oh, that the coffee in the waiting area was bad. That the bagels, this is one of Frankie's favorites. The bagels were shitty. I mean, it really runs a gambit from, you know, somebody not calling somebody by the right name or spelling their name wrong. And maybe some of it is for a good reason, too. Maybe you fucking hit something with their car and you were going to try to get away without telling them. And they saw a dent in their car and went, what the fuck happened there? So maybe you deserve it. A service advisor should probably not be on the hunt to get good CSI, to get good reviews. They should just kind of try. And like I said, it's easy for me to sit here and tell you how you should do something. And then in the same sentence, in the same breath, tell you that I would never even try. But you should not be so in tune with trying to get a good CSI score or trying to get a good review. You should just try to do your job right. And then the good scores will follow. That's at least what I think. Don't slack on customer service and then pop up and ask them to take the time to fill out your CSI and give you a solid score. Here's the thing. If you're terrible, if you're a terrible service advisor, and you fucking know who you are, I don't need to point you out. I don't need to call anybody out. If you're not so good at it, you hate it, and obviously some of you are never going to be actors, okay? You're never going to get an Academy Award for being an actor of any kind. If you hate your job or you hate somebody or you hate your job and you hate somebody, especially, you're going to wear it. You're going to wear it like a jacket. You're going to wear it like a mask. You're going to wear it. You're not going to be able to hide it. And you're not going to be able to hide it from the people who bring their cars in. If you don't want to talk to them, and then you look up and go, can I help you? It's an attitude, and it's also a feeling that you're going to get from somebody. And people with good charisma and good customer skills, they'll nail that CSI score every time. And it's not work for them, okay? And here's the thing, too. And I'll just put this out there real quick, too. If you find yourself as a service advisor and it gives you anxiety and it breaks your chops so much to the point where you just want to shoot yourself and you hate everybody who comes in contact with you, I'll just tell you right now, straight up, you have the wrong job. You have the wrong job. There are hundreds of millions of different jobs out there that don't involve actually talking to a customer or having to deal with them or having to provide customer service. And they're perfectly good jobs, and some of them are very high paying. Some of them pay well. You should endeavor to find one. If you find yourself sitting behind a desk with a phone that never stops ringing and people coming up to you and saying, ha, I want to drop my car off, and you just can't take it anymore, and you just see red, you have the wrong job. And asking people to give you a good CSI score after you've done your job, even though you didn't want to, probably not the best thing. Here's the number two on the list of reasons why service advisors fail. They don't have a system. Now, all of us, I think, and maybe I'm wrong, I think a lot of us, let me put it that way, and I'm not going to make up any facts or figures. I'm going to 65%. I'll just say I think a lot of us have a system. And even though the day-to-day business of being an automotive technician and then also being a service advisor is so absolutely unbelievably and excruciatingly at times random. The randomness of what's coming in the door, what the fuck is wrong with it, and how the people who own them are going to behave. The randomness of that can throw a monkey wrench into any system anybody would ever have. But if you plan for the fact that things are going to go wrong, if you plan for the fact that things are just going to be chaotic, and I've talked about that before, there is a level of chaos that comes with being in a service department or in a repair shop, an independent or even a dealership. There's a randomness to it, a chaos. And some days it's high and some days it's low. Some days it's bearable and some days it's not. But you need to have some sort of a system to kind of guide you through from one checkpoint to the other until you get to the end of the day. And maybe you meet your goals for that day. And maybe that's your system, is to just make sure that you don't have too many cars outstanding, too many holdovers, you know, too many cars where the loaner cars are out or whatever it is that you want to shoot for, have a system to get there. But also realize that, and I'm telling you, the randomness of being a service advisor and then on top of that being a technician, you can't calculate it, but you have to be ready for it. And you never know how bad it's going to be. There have been days, and this is just from the technician's point of view, there have been days where I'll bring in a car the night before, throw it up on a lift, and fully intend to work on that car the next day. But then when the next day rolls around, more random and chaotic and unbelievable bullshit comes through the door and cycles itself through my fingers and my hands and my expertise and my willingness to do whatever I need to do. And I'll get to the end of the day and I will not have touched that fucking car. It happens to me all the time. It happens to me all the time. I fully intend to work on a car. I have two bays because we're obviously, I beat you guys all up about this all the time. There is a shortage of technicians. And because there is such an excruciating shortage, I have two bays. Maybe some of you are jealous. Please don't be jelly, okay? But I'll have a car in one bay, and then I'll get a waiter, or I'll get something that needs to have this done, or maybe this is a car I sold parts on, and it goes on and on and on and on, and I work through lunch a lot of times. I don't even take a break. Sometimes they have to go to the bathroom. I put that off 3-4 times until I can't anymore. It just happens. But I have a system, just I'm not always able to implement it, okay? And if you're a service advisor, you need to have a system too. One of the best systems I ever saw for a service advisor, and this was a gentleman who was doing the job as like a stopgap employment measure for him. He got a much better job, much better pay in a field that he went to school for, and it has changed his life because really, as a service advisor, he was really just living the life of like a skater punk. And now he's a stand-up and righteous dude who has a good job, and life is really looking up for him. And it should. He's a very nice guy. Love that guy. But as a service advisor, one of the things that he used to do every goddamn day, he came around at 3 o'clock and he spoke to every one of us technicians. Now there was only 3 or 4 of us at the time anyway. He'd go, hey, this car here, maybe I was working on it, maybe I wasn't. Are you going to be done with this car today? And I would give him a straight up answer one way or the other, yes or no. That's all he wanted. He didn't want to know that, oh, this part's there, this part's not there, this part broke, that part broke, whatever. He didn't want to know really any of that stuff. He probably already knew that anyway. Is it going to go today? No. Boom. Thank you. And then he would go in and he would make the calls. Because really, if you don't have a system, okay, and the system will overrun you with its own system. Okay, your lack of a system doesn't mean that a system isn't going to come along and smack you upside the fucking head. You don't call your customers. If you don't call them and tell them what's going on with their car, they're going to fucking call you. So why not head that shit off at the pass? Why wouldn't you? You go in 3 o'clock, you know which cars are going to go, which cars are not going to go. You call the guys and say, listen, the technician is working on your car right now, but he says it's not going to be done for today. I want you to look to pick it up tomorrow, probably in the afternoon, because he says he's got a few things he's going to need to do to it. And then he wants to test drive it. And that's going to put him at around noon. So if you call me at noon, 1 o'clock tomorrow, or wait till 3, I'll call you. Then we'll let you know what's going on with your car. So instantly, he's taken the initiative to update and inform his customers so they don't have to call him when he's trying to chop a deuce or fucking get the fuck out of there at 5:30, or maybe he's doing something else. Who even knows what he's doing? And he doesn't really want to answer the goddamn phone. He puts the onus on a customer. He calls them, he leaves a voicemail, he calls them, he talks to them, maybe even texts them, maybe he even emails them. There's so many ways to contact people now, it's crazy. That's a system. That was a really, 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 really good system too, by the way. I think you should pick a time. I think 3 o'clock was perfect because at 3 o'clock, I know as a mechanic, as a technician, whatever you want to call me, a dickhead, that fits too. I know that at that particular point in time, if the car I'm working on right then and there is going to be finished at five, do I have another hour worth of work to do to it? Yes. Will I be able to wrap everything up by five? Yes. So is the car going to be able to go at 5 o'clock? Yes. But if it's 3 o'clock and I'm fucking balls deep and I got my hands halfway up a car's ass and I'm not going to be done with it, I'll just tell him, nope, it's going to be a tomorrow thing. And he'll say, okay, late. Yep. Okay, great. That's all he wanted to know. It wasn't, how come he isn't done yet? Oh, the customer's coming in about 5 minutes. You know, so that's not one of those things, man. I'm telling you, that's the worst thing in the world is when somebody who is not really all that knowledgeable about a car starts making promise times. Yeah, that's just not smart at all, okay? So have a system and don't let it involve too many things that you don't know anything about or that you can't do anything about. The randomness of what we do has to be factored in. It's the Heisenberg factor. You don't know what the fuck is going to happen. The chaos is consistently chaotic. Number three, here's number three and why service advisors fail. They don't have a pregame. What? Pre-game? What is that, a show where people come out and say, well, he's having a good year, but, you know, he pulled a hamstring. So, no. What they're talking about here with the pregame is they start off their day in such a way that they're not prepared to run the game they want to, and they don't even realize how big of an impact it has on their performance. You need to show up ready to go. That's what they say when they say you don't have a pregame. If you show up, and I'm betting you that this happens to a lot of you, a service advisor, he shows up late, the place is already open, he's hungover, he needs his coffee before he can even talk to people, there's three or four people already milling around waiting to be helped. You got no use for that guy. You need the guy with the pregame who's going to show up at 7 when the doors open at 8. He's going to have all of his ducks in a row. He's going to know who's coming in and fucking why, and he's going to be able to get them back on the road again, either in a loaner or in a shuttle or with someone who's going to pick them up. He's got a plan and he's already put it into place and he's ready for it. He's done the pregame. He knows what the fuck is going to happen because he's prepared. Holy shit, pregame. Now, this next one doesn't make a lot of sense to me, so I'm going to have to read it out loud. It says number four, they don't pet the dog. I'm not sure what the fuck they're talking about here. You need to know what it means to pet the dog. If you're new here, watch this video, get caught up. Oh, okay. No BS, no rushing, but making time to provide them with the kind of service they're looking for and deserve. When service advisors fail, a big part of it is often that they've made the mistake of allowing being too busy to get in the way of taking care of their customers. They start acting like the car is the commodity rather than the customer and are surprised when the customer doesn't come back. I think what they're trying to say here, because I don't want to watch the fucking video. I don't have time for that bullshit. They don't pet the dog. As a service advisor, your job is to take care of the customer. Everyone else in the dealership is trained or at least hired to take care of the car. Your job is to take care of the customer. And I think that gets lost big time. Because I would think, honestly, that it's really easy to fixate on the car for a service advisor. Well, you know, the car this, the car that, the car that. No. Don't you worry about the car, okay? You put down on an RO what's wrong with the car. I'm going to look at it. I'm going to determine that what they said is wrong with the car is actually wrong with the car. That's one of the things that you have to do. You have to coax from the customer. Sometimes you have to ask, you know, leading questions. Maybe you have to ask them straight up, what are you talking about? You know, because customers, and I, like I said it earlier on, customers say the most insane shit you'll ever hear. Some of them I think are truly actually insane. I mean, now that we don't have insane asylums anymore, those fucking people are out there walking around. Some of them are out there driving around. You know, you see them all day long. Find out from them what's really wrong with the car. We'll pet the dog being the car. I think what they really mean is the customer is the dog. You need to pet the dog while I take his food, while I rob the house. Number five, and this, I think really honestly, this number five is probably the very worst trait that you can have as a service advisor. I think it is the one number one reason why service advisors fail. I think it's the worst thing that a service advisor can do. And it's simple. It's just three words here. This is the sentence. They prejudge people. Oh my God. If you're a longtime listener, you know that I had a service advisor who did this and that I ripped him an absolutely fucking black hole sized asshole for doing this. He did it all the fucking time. He would tell me that somebody didn't want to buy something because they're broke dick. That's what he would say. Oh, they're broke dick. Like, no, you're a dick. You should be broke. You should be broken in half and disposed of in a dumpster. This guy would see what somebody drove or see how they dressed or maybe how they acted or how they talked and then assume in nearly 100% of the cases that they just didn't have any money. Now, let me tell you something right now, okay? I don't know any of these people, but I'm going to name a list of people who have more money than God. Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos. Okay, this is just four people that have enough money to buy an entire country. They have a lot of money. Do they always dress to the nines? Fuck no, they don't. They might dress like slobs. You know why? Because it's comfortable to dress like a slob. I ought to know. I dress like a slob all the time. So let's just say for a second, here's another guy, Elon Musk. He lives in the town I'm living in, right? So let's just say he had a relative or a niece or a cousin or maybe a parent. Somebody in his family has a car that they need to get worked on. And he's just chilling that day. He's not doing anything. He's not, you know, exploring space or building cars. He's just chilling. So he says to whoever this is, a member of their family, says, oh, you know, if your car's broken, I'll take it into the dealership. So imagine, if you would, somebody like Warren Buffett or Bill Gates, somebody with a lot of money, dressing in a pair of ratty, shitty jeans and maybe an old t-shirt from college that they like a lot and a pair of flip-flops, maybe some sneakers, right? And they're going to bring in some family member's car to your dealership that maybe isn't brand new. Maybe it's a couple years old. Maybe it's got a dent in it. Maybe it's got a little rust or a scratch or something. So it's not new looking. Here comes Bill Gates. He rolls into your dealership drive-on and he's got this shit car and he's dropping it off for a friend. He says, hey, the water pump, the low coolant light's on and we've been told the water pump probably needs to be changed. Can you take a look at it? And this cocksucker, this fucking service advisor we had who should probably be taken out and shot and chopped up, and what they probably ought to do is dig a really, really deep hole to put him in them. So Bill Gates comes in and he looks like a slob and he's driving a slob's car and this guy doesn't even want to help him out. He's like, yeah, what do you want, you know? And maybe he's not even going to be polite. He's just going to be a jerk. He's, yeah, what do you want? Well, I need to get the car looked at. We think it needs a water pump. Oh, you think it needs a water pump. What do you know? Well, what do I know? Do you got a pencil and a piece of paper, asshole? My name's Bill Gates. Yeah, that Bill Gates, dick. You cannot judge a book by its cover, and you should not ever. Now, where I'm living right now, it seems to me like every son of a bitch in this town has more money than me. So when you meet somebody, regardless of what they're dressed like, and even regardless of what they drive, they're probably sitting on seven figures. It's not really hyperbole. The people here have tons and tons of money. They don't really have a problem spending it. They just want a little respect. That's all. So if you prejudge people, if you're one of these people who is a racist or misogynist or just a general overall asshole, being a service advisor is definitely not going to fucking work out for you. If you decide to figure out how much money somebody has and how much they're going to want to spend and then correlate that with how much money you're going to make off them or how hard you're going to try to sell them anything or whether or not you're going to try to sell them anything at all, then this is definitely the fucking wrong job for you. Okay, don't do it. Here's another one of my little pet peeves. Uncle Jimmy's got a big goddamn Encyclopedia Britannica-sized book of pet peeves. And this one is in volume one on page two. Number six, service advisors diagnose cars in the service drive. Just don't fucking do it. Don't do it. Oh, this used to drive me wild. And I hate it. It happened to me today, as a matter of fact. Somebody came in with a car, it had a check engine light, and somebody goes, oh, it's probably this. And I was praying to myself, God, please let it be anything but that. And of course, that's what it was. They were right. but they were just fucking guessing. So knowing what's wrong and guessing what's wrong is not the same fucking thing, okay? And it's going to get you into trouble. And everybody wants to be smart. Everybody wants everyone in the world to think they're smart. You know, I'd love it if people thought I was smart. I don't think there's anybody out there who thinks I'm smart. Even I don't think I'm smart. I could certainly stand to be smarter. But don't diagnose from the chair. Don't diagnose the service drive. It's not your fucking job. And what happens when you're wrong? You know, somebody comes in and they got a check engine light on or they got some problem and you've seen it before. You've seen that problem before. You're like, oh my God, it's probably this. Oh, I'm so smart. I know that. It's probably this. It's probably this. It's probably this. You could be right 99 times out of 100. But that one time that you're fucking wrong, you're going to create a fucking absolute shit show of a problem. As a technician, I can't really, I mean, I can, and sometimes I do, and I shouldn't, but you can't really assume what the problem is, because you're going to fuck yourself if you do that. And believe me, you don't want to fuck yourself. It's hard to do, first off. Not like I've tried. No, you have to. When you do diagnosis on a car as a technician, you're pretty sure what the end result is going to be most of the time. But you know as well as I do, there's always that one time where it's not what you think it is. And now you have fucked yourself because you said, oh, I can, if it's what I think it is, I can fix it in 5 minutes. Now that's not so bad, I don't think. If it's what I think it is. So what you've done is you've kind of built them up and let them know you might have to let them down if it's what I think it is. And then later they go, well, how come it's taking so long? Because it wasn't what I thought it was. Remember I said, maybe you don't remember this part, because people don't hear what they don't want to hear. If you say something and they don't want to hear it, and then you follow it up with something they do want to hear, guess what? They're gonna chop that sentence in half, and they're going to delete the shit that they didn't want to hear, and they're just going to go, oh, but you said... Trust me, they'll do it. Don't diagnose the service drive as a service advisor. Do not do it. Okay, if somebody's got a broken windshield, yeah, you can go, hey, your windshield's broke. You know, you don't need to be Einstein to figure that one out. But as far as like a check engine light, and man, I'm telling you, gentlemen and ladies, technicians and mechanics of the world, if you're listening, I want you to go in somewhere, anywhere, where people work and they think they know things about cars. Could be an auto parts store, or even your service drive for your service advisors, or maybe friends of yours who don't work on cars, but they think they know things about cars. Go ahead and tell them that you have a check engine light on in your car and ask them what they think it is. Oh boy, you're going to get 1,000 different answers. Probably the most common one you're going to get is, it's probably a loose gas cap. So everybody does it. Everybody diagnoses from the chair. Everybody diagnoses in the service drive. Everybody does it. Everybody does it. And maybe even you do it as a mechanic. But you have to go through. You have to be the one who's right. You have to be right. Kills me when somebody says, oh, it's probably this, and it ends up being that. I'm like, oh. And sometimes I'll lie. Sometimes I'll lie. You know, I did that today, actually. I had to, because I can't have people doing this and thinking they're good at what I do because they guessed right. It's not a guessing game. Somebody said to me, oh, this car's got a check engine light. It has this problem. And they go, it has a check engine. Let me try that again, Eric. I mean, somebody comes in, they have a check engine light. And the guy goes, oh, it's probably this. And I went in and it was that is what it was. But I told him it was something else, because I didn't want him to think he was right. Because I don't need that. I don't need to reinforce that somebody was right when they shouldn't be fucking offering up a diagnosis at all. It's like, nah, you were wrong. It's a good thing you didn't tell the customer that's what it was, because that isn't what it was. Well, I did tell him that. Well, then you should just learn to shut the fuck up is what you should do, okay? All right, let's move along here. I'm going long. Sorry, this is what I do. This is one thing that really doesn't affect me too much, because if I quote a repair, it's quoted in labor time. But what the service advisors do is, and this is number 7, they offer discounts as a rule and not an exception. Some service advisors go to it like they would run home to mama. It's not something that they should do. A discount is something that really, honestly, in my opinion, is something you should earn. If you have a guy who comes in every 2 months to get his oil changed, and then like on the 16th month, when he's already been there 8 times already, he needs wiper blades, you should say, hey, you know what? I'll give you half off on wiper blades because you're such a good customer. That's when a discount should be offered. It should only be offered to good customers. A discount should almost never be offered to somebody who's being an asshole or somebody who's being a jerk or somebody who's trying to take advantage of you, because that's what they want. And really, a discount is not something that they deserve. They don't deserve that. We're performing a service. And here's the other thing too, is that service advisors don't understand that there's real serious value to what we do as technicians. There's value to it. If I take a car that is running like shit and it needs a bunch of work, and then I diagnose it and I lay out how much it should cost to fix it, and then they go ahead and go for it and I fix it and it runs better. It runs the way it did when it was new. It works like it's supposed to and they're happy. Should you have to discount that? Fuck no, you should never have to discount that. But if that guy comes in all the time and he gets his regular maintenance done and he needs, you know, maybe he has a repair he needs maybe once every other year or something, and he's always there and you know his name, you could certainly offer him a discount especially if something's excruciating. If we worked on the car religiously for the last 3 years and he's close to being out of warranty or maybe even is out of warranty and he needs something big like a transmission or a brake job or something that's going to cost him some money, you should say, listen, you're a really great customer, so we're going to offer you a discount to get this work done to your car because we value your business. Discounts should not be used to placate somebody who's being a fucking dick or somebody who's being a jerk. Okay. That's not how it should be. And offering discounts, it should not be a rule. It should not be something you do on every repair. It should not be. Absolutely should not be. We are worth, and I'll tell you right now that our labor rate at the dealership I'm at right now is perfectly reasonable. We have more work than we could shake a stick at. If we wanted to, we could bring in probably 200 cars a day. We don't have enough technicians to do 200 cars a day, but we have enough work that we could do 200 cars a day. And we could stand to get a few less. Okay, we could stand that. So why not raise your labor rate? I mean, if we're talking about value here, your labor rate indicates how much your labor is worth. And if you got people banging down your door, your labor must be worth more, I think. Okay, I don't have any problem with a shop raising its labor rate. Okay, because it does a couple of things that are also good for your business. It's going to separate the wheat from the chaff, okay, or chaff, whatever you call it. It makes people who can't afford to get a repair done maybe find a shop that's a little bit more in their price range, okay? It's going to keep them from having to beat you up for a discount because they actually have the money to get a repair done at a place that's maybe of a little bit lesser quality, or maybe they offer quality work, but it's at a more reasonable price. There's no reason why you can't charge a premium labor rate for premium repairs. The technicians I work with in the shop that I'm in right now are all basically really good technicians. Okay. There's a few new people there, but they're sharp. They work hard. They work real hard sometimes. Okay. Sometimes they don't, but they work hard. They know what they're doing and they get the job done. And then we do the best job we can all the time. So the value is there. If they raised our labor rate, people would still want to come there. They would still want to partake in the value that our labor is. Okay. They would still want to do that. So offering a discount is like saying, well, we know we're too much. Should never have that attitude. Never have that attitude that we charge too much. Never. That one dickhead who used to work for us, he thought that. He thought we charged too much, and he said it out loud. Let people who don't know what your value is, let them tell you you charge too much, and then watch them as they walk away, maybe give them the finger and tell them to go fuck themselves. Okay? They don't see the value in what you do at the price you're asking. Then screw them. Screw them. Let them get their shit fixed somewhere else. Okay. Number eight, reasons that service advisors fail. This one is, I've spelled this one out. Number eight, they don't like people. I'm telling you, it's a terrible job to be a service advisor. It is terrible. And if you don't like people, it makes it doubly terrible. You have to like people. You don't have to like them all. I don't see any way you could, but you should try. This article, this particular little blurb goes, I've met people who just straight up don't like people. They're grumpy, miserable, and don't smile at people. That you're the wrong person for the job. What drives me wild is that somebody sits across from you in an interview and gets a taste of your ambiance, of your attitude, of your general disposition. They sit across from you in an interview and they say, yeah, this is the person for me. No, if you are going to hire a service advisor, if you're a service manager and you're listening to this, if you're a general manager or an owner and you're going to hire a service advisor, you need to be looking for a very specific type of person, a type A person who has a good attitude, a modicum of charisma, maybe some intelligence. Integrity would be nice. Throw that in there. Okay. But if you talk to people and they're grumpy and they're miserable, they don't smile, and everything else is, everything in their life is always somebody else's fault, and they left their last job because they hated everybody there, not going to be a good fit in your place either. Not going to be a good fit in your place. If you talk to somebody who just ask them, so do you like people? I mean, do you go out, do you talk to people, do you make friends, are you friendly? And they say no. And you say, thanks for coming in, asshole. Just get them right the fuck out of there. Don't fuck around with these people. They may be able to talk you into hiring them, and they may be able to talk you off the ledge every time you want to try to fire them. But eventually, they're going to go. And eventually, when they do go, they're going to badmouth you. Oh, that place is full of people who are assholes. They wanted me to do this job this way, and I do it this other way. Well, the way you wanted to do it doesn't work. I mean, I got a service advisor now. Every once in a while, she comes out and she tells me, oh, this guy's an asshole. Yeah, well, I'm working on his car, so I don't care if he's an asshole. If he's an asshole to you, maybe you deserved it. You know, I don't know. I wasn't there, so I can't really comment on that. But I don't need to know as a technician if a customer's an asshole. And even then, I might not think he's an asshole. Maybe that's just your opinion and not mine. So don't do that. If you don't like people, get a different job. You know, get one of those jobs where they stick you way, way, way high up in a tower and you look out over the woods to make sure it's not catching on fire. That would be a great job for you if you don't like people. Number 9, they're not consistent. Yeah, they're not consistent. They being inconsistent is one of the things that drives me crazy about everything in my life. And I may be a tad bit autistic about this, but I just prefer consistency in things. You know, if you're going to behave one way, behave that way. Don't behave one way or the other and then switch from this way or the other way. Okay, don't do that. If you do something and you do it on every RO, and maybe I don't like it, but if you do it every time, then I can get used to it. And maybe I can even see your point of view for the way you do something. But if you're not consistent, if you don't do it every time, or if you just do it one time, and then you find out it pisses me off, and then you do it just to piss me off, we're not gonna get along. It's not gonna work out with us. Okay. Be consistent. Being consistent is really, it says here, for service advisors, consistency is everything. I agree with that. Solely from a customer's point of view, because if you're consistent, that means if John Doe walks in on a Tuesday in December and you say, hi, how are you? And he says, I'm fine. How are you? I'm good. What can I do for you today? And then he walks in February and you go, hi, how are you? And he goes, oh, I'm good. Remember me? No, I don't remember you. Who are you? That's not consistency at all. So that's really what being consistent is about. It's being, you know, you're consistently friendly. If somebody says, you know, somebody says something like that to you where you go, oh, I'm sorry, I don't remember you, but I also have a short-term memory problem. What's your name again? And then you can go from there. Be consistent. I think to me personally, it's really important. And there we're talking about, in this particular article, they're talking about being consistent with your customers and being consistent in your customer service. Some days you're super friendly and everything's great. And then the next day, maybe you're grumpy and upset and in a shitty mood about something else. And you take it out on your customers. That's not being consistent, okay? So let's not do that at all. Number 10, and we finally got to the end. And I apologize, you're running long. And Eric's going to have a lot of trouble chopping this all up and making it make sense, because it doesn't make any sense. And the way it's coming out of my yap. This one seems obvious, but I think you'd be surprised at the number of service advisors who just aren't pros at what they do. They aren't pros. They're not professional. What they mean is that you should embrace it. If you're going to do the job, go all in. Embrace it. Do all the things you need to do. Do all the silly little training stuff they do. Bring it. Bring it. Bring 100% to bear on the job all the time. All the time. Bringing 100% is attempting to be a pro. Bringing 100% all the time is being consistent. So do it. Decide you're going to do it, and then do it, and do it the best you can. And you know what else, too? I wanted to throw this in there. This isn't on this particular article. But I did want to say this. And this is something I think that is wrong with our current society, with the society we have that we live in today. And this is nobody's fault. I want to just reiterate this, okay? This is nobody's fault. But one of the things that happens is that we are so sensitive to criticism. We are extremely sensitive to criticism. It's so much to a point that we will attempt to drown other people and their opinions out with our own opinion, or we'll say that they shouldn't say this, that, or the other thing. That's not it at all. The thing is, with criticism, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, every little shred of criticism, from the most innocuous, like offhanded comment that really means nothing to like a great big long dissertation as to why something sucks. Every little tiny bit of criticism ever is constructive. It's all constructive. Okay. You've heard that term before, constructive criticism. All criticism is constructive. If you do something, if you like, just use, I'll use myself as an example. Okay. Let's say that there's somebody who has listened to this podcast and they absolutely fucking hate it. They hate it. They think I'm a jerk. They think the shit I talk about is bullshit. It's crap. I'm just here to get technicians worked up and make them want to quit, make them want to ask for a raise every other day, make them feel bad for not getting paid, make them feel bad for what they do. If somebody said all of that shit to me, I wouldn't take it as, I would take it as criticism. I would, but I'm also would not take it. I would take it as constructive criticism because there's a shred of truth to that. I come on this podcast and a lot of times I point out that our job sucks. And I believe that myself. I'm doing the same job, I'm telling you, that sucks. But I love it. So does it suck for me? No, it doesn't suck for me. But I think for a lot of other people who don't have the same level of insanity that I have, the same level of, I don't know what you would even call it, the same level of tenacity or the same level of stupidity that I have, whatever, I would think that they would hate the job that I have and not want to do it and go find something different to do. Now, if you love the job like I do, try to do the job absolutely the best you can, and you are successful probably somewhere in the 95 to 100% range, then you are a very, very valuable commodity. How valuable are you? Well, you will have to figure that out yourself. I know how valuable I think I am, and I'm paid, I believe, pretty close to what my value is. Would I like to make more? Fuck yeah, I'd like to make more. So constructive criticism of your Uncle Jimmy and this particular podcast would be considered to me to be constructive, to be true, to be something that I should learn from. I'm not going to be sensitive and say, you don't like my podcast? Well, fuck you. No, I'd be like, oh, you don't like my podcast? What is it about it you don't like? I mean, you know, I'm opinionated. I make shit up. I say fuck too much. I don't say anything worth hearing. I repeat myself. It's a limited subject, so that's why. But I think really honestly, all criticism is constructive. You should always try to get both sides of the story. Always. Because you know, when somebody tells a story, they're going to leave out the part of that story that makes them look like an asshole every fucking time too. Then you hear the other side and you realize, oh, now we have the whole story. It's always two sides to a story. So if you have, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, if you have criticism of me or you have criticism of the podcast, you think maybe I should just fucking completely stop doing it, certainly hit me with it. You know, go to the Facebook page and put it on there. Everybody else will read it too. Maybe they'll agree. They'll go, yeah, you know, that goddamn Uncle Jimmy, he should just fuck off and die. He should go away. I don't want to hear him no more. I might mention something about just turning it off and not listening to it, but I might take that as a constructive criticism to actually try doing a better job at it, which really, I don't see how it's not possible. I could be doing a better job every time I do this thing. All right. Anyway, that's enough. I've been up. I'm up. It's real late for me right now. I wanted to put this out there about service advisors. Remember, I want to just kind of wrap this up with this, okay? Service advisors are doing one of the crappiest jobs that has ever been devised, ever. They have to deal with the general public, which is always just an unbelievable, unimaginable shit show of garbage every day, every fucking day. The good ones who are the service advisors out there who are good at it, who are really good at it, I mean really, really good at it and make a lot of money. They're a special breed. And you could conceivably do it too. But it would require so much work and it would require a specific personality and a specific mindset that I would say, here we go with some made up numbers. I would say 90% of the people out there on the planet don't possess those qualities. They don't possess the charisma, the attitude, the can-do attitude, the ability to follow through, the ability to do certain things and not certain things, the ability to say certain things and not say certain things. It's just rare. It's rare. So if you have a service advisor and they're at least giving you an effort, try to let them know that you appreciate them. If you've got a service advisor who is phoning it in and who's a jerk and crosses you up all the time and pisses his customers off, maybe you ought to find a way to kill him and make it look like an accident. All right, no, don't do that. See, Uncle Jimmy, you can't seem to get through a single episode of this goddamn podcast without threatening to kill somebody. Well, maybe that's some criticism that I need to hear from some of you. Okay. Anyway, I don't want to condone violence. And to keep me from condoning violence any further, I'm just going to log off. I really am. I'm just going to go away tonight and let you listen to this. And usually at the end, you know what happens. I just go, see you.